Let's bow our hearts before Almighty Yahweh. Father in heaven, we are so grateful for your Sabbath day where we can come and honor you, learn more of your word and the truths that you have placed in that word. We pray that the message today would enlighten us and that it would encourage us. We thank you for getting us through these days of the world and that we can focus always on you and not entertain the thoughts of the world. We thank you for guiding. We ask for special healing for those that have requested healing, either spiritually or physically. We know that as Yahweh Rapha, you will answer the prayers of the faithful. And we pray that you will guide us now as we delve into your word. Be with those who are listening that they might also receive a special blessing this day. In this prayer now, in this petition, we ask in Yahshua's name. Hallelujah. You may be seated. Well, in the news the past couple of weeks, some scientists in Israel were able to print the entire Old Testament on, maybe you saw this, 300,000 words onto a tiny silicon surface, 1/100th of an inch square. And that's how small it is. See that finger there? You can see that's how small they put the Old Testament. It's the world's smallest Bible. That's almost inconceivable when you think about it. And as difficult as that could be, it pales in comparison with the miraculous design Yahweh gave each of us, the human body. Amazing as it is, what scientists have done is basically child's play when it comes to the makeup and the design of each part of our bodies. Today I want to take a leave of the normal biblical analysis that we usually do on the Sabbath in sermons and give you a sense of the awesomeness of Yahweh and his creation by looking at the best example that we each know of, our own bodies. Your own miraculous physical design. And at the same time, show the absolute absurdity of the religion of evolution that says, based on its own faith, that it all came together by accident. All on its own, with no intelligence guiding it, and blindly developing from very basic to totally inconceivably complex forms of life, going from who knows where to some place where there's no reason or purpose for doing so, according to the evolutionists. I hope that when we're finished, you will agree that it is preposterous to think that a mindless, meaningless creation arose without a plan, without a purpose, and that the development of a marvelously complex universe with it's beyond even our minds to comprehend is pointless, according to those people who hold to this theory. There's no rationale for its existence, so why would it come together? Some of the questions I've always had. Think of it in the cold light of truth, and you have to agree that the religion of evolution is pure insanity. And by the way, there is a church of evolution. I happen to find it on the web. They even have their own Bible of evolution, which basically attacks the Bible, as you would suppose. One scientist attests to the blind faith of evolution by saying, "It is good to keep in mind that nobody has ever succeeded in producing even one species by the accumulation of micromutations. Darwin's theory of natural selection has never had any proof, yet it has been universally accepted." Talk about the biggest lie put on humanity in the history of humanity. This was by a professor of zoology at the University of California. You know, if Yahweh wanted to, he could etch all of the known books in existence. Millions and millions of books. Billions and billions of words. He could put them all on a molecular structure that many thousands and millions of times smaller than this little chip. And then have it reproduce itself flawlessly by the billions of copies for the next 7,000 years. Not neglecting a single comma, a single space, a single capital letter, a single period. And he could do it all in a nanosecond and think nothing of it. Simple for him. Well, as David observed in Psalm 139:14, It is incredible how our bodies are put together and function. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works. I wonder if David even understood how, even an inkling of how complex we really are. We truly are made. I want to look at only one part of the body, just one. Remember, there are so many different aspects to our bodies that are so complex, it's inconceivable that it would even develop, even, you know, on its own with no purpose. It's just inconceivable. But I want to look at the eye, the human eye. The eyes are the most important, I guess we'd all say, of the five senses. And yet they're all a marvel in themselves. You wake up each morning, you open up your baby blues, and immediately you start processing information. Your eyes feed sight data to your brain so that you can make sense of what you're seeing and not walk into a wall or pour your milk on the floor instead of in your cereal bowl. So your eyes and your brain work in close harmony, very close harmony. And that presents a great big problem for evolution. Your eyes are just instruments of your brain to collect data. My optometrist was telling me about bifocal contact lenses. Huh? I said, very intelligently. How can that work? How can that work, seeing that when you look down to read, the lens follows with your eyeball. It floats on your eyeball and follows down. How does that work? Well, he explained something very fascinating. He said there are different rings on these lenses, different magnifications. And when you look up, your brain focuses on the ring that shows distance and can focus on distance. When you look down, your brain automatically uses that ring that magnifies so you can read close up. It's your brain that does that. Isn't that amazing? Your brain chooses which one to use. That's amazing. Indeed, you know, it's your brain that actually sees. It's not your eyes that see. It's your brain that sees. If it wasn't for Yahweh, I wonder what sophisticated intelligence brought all of these 40-some specialized cells together to make sight possible. Think about it. Just think about it. Or did all the highly specialized cells in your eye figure it all out on their own with no intelligence guiding them as they worked with the laws of physics to make sight possible? And how did they even know anything about physics to begin with? These brain cells just stumbled along, for billions and billions of years, trying to be specialized, but not knowing how or even understanding why. Does that make any sense of an inquiring mind? What's the point? What's the purpose? Where are they going? Why are they doing this? Well, evolution says that the body advances by reaction to outside stimuli. Okay, well, why would you react in a certain way to develop more highly complex structures like the brain or the eye? And what is it that is taught as scientific gospel in high school and college that makes no sense? Makes absolutely no sense. Talk about blind faith, and no pun intended. And believe it or not, scientists say that the eye developed from a freckle. That's what they say. We have freckles all over our body. Why did that eye end up right there? Maybe not. Why not on the gluteus maximus where you could have 20/20 hindsight? You know, I mean, it's crazy. It's totally crazy. How do your eyes see? That's the main thing. Well, the eyes process light that reflects off objects. When you look at a blue shirt, for instance, somebody's wearing a blue shirt, that shirt is everything but blue. It's every color in the rainbow but blue. We call it blue, but it's not blue because blue is reflected off of it. The blue is not inside, it's reflected back at you. So it's not part of the shirt. Blue bounces off, and that's what you see, and you call it blue. And light waves are changed into electrical signals that the brain can use. The brain has to use electrical data and not light waves. It can't process those. It can't use those as visual images. Now, how did the eye know that the brain only worked with electrical data, electrical signals? How did the eye know that? How did those eye cells learn to do that, seeing that the eye has no intelligence of its own? and the eye cells have no thinking ability. How do they do that? I need electrical signals, Mr. Eye, so stop sending me light waves. And the eye says, what's an electrical signal? Without a brain of its own, I'm being a little facetious here, but that's the sphere where we enter when we talk about evolution, the realm of foolishness. And remember that after the image you see goes through your eye lens, it becomes inverted. So everything you see is upside down. You're looking at me, I'm standing on my head right now, according to the light waves that you're processing. So everything is upside down. Everything that you process has to be turned around through your brain and turned right back up again. So your brain has to do all these things while you're watching and doing them instantly. You go from one scene to another, your brain automatically, it's just amazing when you think about it. It's a law of physics that Yahweh dealt with and overcome by using brain power. So how did human cells with no ability to think figure this out? Not even to learn by trial and error. How did ignorant cells figure out a way to outwit the law of light waves all on their own and keep us all from standing on our heads the rest of our lives? Well, it took billions and zillions of years of trial and error, the evolutionists would say. Well, I see. So during that time when we're waiting for our eyelashed freckle to become an eye, we're completely blind. We don't have anything to see with. And so in those millions of intervening years, we all stepped over a cliff or became food to beasts, and we ceased to exist as a species. Think about how your eyes, for instance, one amazing thing, are protected. Somehow the eyes decided that they needed protection from the elements, from direct, powerful light, sunlight, from blows and falls and debris and dryness. All of these things are built into your eye. And not only that, there's a protective cone-shaped cavity in our skulls, in our heads, called an orbit or socket that holds the eyeball. Around the inside of that are layers of soft, fatty tissue that surround the eye socket. So it protects it, and it enables it to move smoothly and easily. Now, how did the eye figure that out? What brainless cell thought of that? What cell figured out that it needed to reproduce fat cells to cushion the eyeball in a socket in the skull? And why did it end up there anyway? How many trillions of years would it take for the completely stupid eye to come to that conclusion? The eyeball is protected by the eyebrows, the eyelids, eyelashes, lacrimal glands to lubricate it, irises to close and open to let in less or more light, forms of defense, each having to evolve separately and yet instantly, according to the theory, or they wouldn't. I wouldn't have survived. We'd all be blind. All it would take is for one thing not to evolve with the rest, and the eye would have been useless. Another huge mystery that applies to all development of all living things is how does the new physical change, the new development, you know, the better version, how does that information end up in the genetic code so that it could reproduce the next greater version? You see, how does that work? How does, if I had an accident and maybe as a child and my leg got cut off in the accident, am I going to have children born with one leg? Well, the evolutionists would say, well, ultimately that's what's going to happen. How? How does that genetic code, we have to get into the DNA, which we're going to do in a minute, but it can't. The DNA does not change. It doesn't change. So at what point does the genetic code become altered to reflect one-leggedness? Well, it just can't. For one thing, I can't live a billion years to have that happen, if that's what it takes, according to evolutionists. Well, let's look at some facts about the eye that render evolution a study and fantasy. Number one, let's keep things in focus. Sorry about that. And those words just keep happening. Because the eye is a certain size, the lens is made to work with this size, the lens focus is variable, and controlled by the vision part of our brain, which allows us to see near and far. You know, when you get older, your lenses don't, they're not as flexible. So you have to use glasses to see close up, because when you look up close, you have to have a fat lens. Well, it's not as flexible as it was when you were 20 years old. And so you have to account for that and adjust for that. And the eye somehow knew that. It knew when you look closer that the lens had to get fatter. How it knew that, I don't know. It's amazing by a bunch of, amazing feat, I should say, by a bunch of cells that are as dumb as rocks. But that's the way the evolutionist said it happens. The rays of light hitting the eye from the outside are united to form one image through the light refracting part of the eye. In order for this to happen, the rays of light are converted to, as we said, electrical stimuli, which then travel to the optic center in the brain and the cerebrum and enter conscious thought as an image. How did blind chance figure out how to make all the necessary, highly sophisticated adjustments to the eye to work in this harmony with the brain? How did it do that? Oh, wait a minute. We got another problem. There's two eyes. Two eyes. They both had to develop at the same time. Oh, my goodness. How would that ever happen? How did they all evolve, you know, consecutively? I mean, not consecutively. At the same time. Simultaneously. In a precisely the same way. To look the same way. Same color. Same size. You know, eyebrows kind of the same. Eyelash length the same. And then work in tandem so that we don't see double. That the brain had to figure out, okay, I'm getting input from over here, I'm getting input from over here, and I don't want to see two images, so the brain puts it together and gives you something with depth, because you're looking from two different angles, you're seeing depth in things, not just, you know, three-dimensional. How did that work? Well, who knows? Evolutionist certainly doesn't know. He just tacks on a few more billion years and says, okay, you know, eventually it figured it out. In the evolution of the eye, which came first? The eye or the vision center of the brain? They both have to be working together at the same time. If the eye came first, then why? How did it know that it had to make all of these sophisticated advancements so that the brain could use it to see with? How did it know that? Since the brain didn't know anything about or even care about the eye in the first place. Well, if the brain developed first, how did the brain tell the eye to make all these things? All these advancements and highly sophisticated adjustments and changes, and so it could deal with the real world. How did it do that? How did it do that? And how did, well, there's just so many thousands and thousands of questions you could ask. In the evolution of the eye, how long did it take before the eye became a functional organ? In other words, how long was the eye useless before it, you know, got its act together, which made us, in the meantime, blind? How about this? What evolved first, the eye or the muscles that hold it in place and control it? I think there's six muscles. And how did these muscles know that, well, when I'm going to turn my eye to look this way, these muscles have to relax so that I don't pull the eye apart, you know, while I'm turning the eyeball this way. How did that all happen? What told the muscles how to do that? How did they know how to do that? Because remember, there's no intelligence guiding this. It just, you know, it just happened. And we finally are able to use this organ. Were we able to see in almost real time as we do now? Or did the vision center of our brain have to evolve more to process that information? And how did the vision center know how to evolve to make processing of light waves possible? What gave it direction? How did it know? Did we see in color? Did we see in black and white? In what sequence did the parts of the eye evolve? There are over 40 sophisticated parts that have all had to work together and had all had to come into existence at the same time for the eye to function. How did it do that? A lot of parts to that eye. Some parts of the eye are not found in any other part of the body. How did natural selection devise all this to come together? You know, when you cry, you emit tears. Those tears have antiseptic qualities to them. Germ killers keep your eye from getting all infected and useless. How did it anticipate that need? How did the eye know what a germ was that he needed to counteract? Well, the eye says, what's a germ anyway, you know? Tears also flush foreign objects from the eye. You know, we get something in our eye, and the eye wells up with water and washes it out, hopefully. How did ignorant cells know how to do that, to keep clean in this way? And it would have happened, again, had to happen immediately, so that the eye could be washed out at the first hint of trouble. The eyebrow keeps sweat from coming down into the eye. Now, that isn't part of the eye proper, but how did the body know? Well, I got to have a little bit of a raised area, put some hair on it so the water doesn't come down and burn your eye. How did the body know that? Well, there's so many questions. Keep in mind, there's a critical principle here. Again, whenever an advancement of sophistication came about, somehow that had to be transferred to the DNA so that the next offspring would have that characteristic. And how does that happen? How does that happen? How does the message, hey, we got an improvement here, get from the eye or any other developing organ to the DNA and the germ cells? You know, they say they can make stem cells from skin cells. If you look at it, DNA, the same DNA is virtually in every cell of your body. And that's how they can do this DNA fingerprinting. When someone creates does something wrong, commits a crime, they take the DNA from that person and they can find evidence that matches it from the crime scene. And you can say, well, that's the guy. It's like fingerprinting. It only applies to you, nobody else. So that means the DNA in a skin cell is the same as reproductive cell. And how does DNA, a bunch of extremely complex but totally stupid proteins, even know what to do to continue to replicate these improved changes? Or even know that it must replicate them? Or even care? Why do humans even, who don't even know how it works, with their brains, can't even figure it out? You know, we're supposed to be the result of evolution. You think our brains could figure it out? That's, you know, that would be logical. Well, you know, the deeper you go, the more ridiculous it gets. To believe things that advance on their own with no direction, no awesome intelligence behind them, no thinking, no planning, no preparing, no overriding intelligence to know what to do at what time, just blind chemicals reacting to their environment and figuring out a miraculous solution that works harmoniously with the rest of the body and ensures survival. How does that all work? Many complex chemicals to make the extremely intricate and complex bodies we live in. And they call this scientific. Ah, it just happened. It just reaction of our bodies to the environment. For atheism to be true, there must be an alternative explanation for how the universe and life came into existence. And although beliefs in some form of evolution predated Charles Darwin, he was the first to develop a model of how evolution could have occurred. He said it came by natural selection. He once identified himself as a Christian, believe it or not, but some events of his life turned him against the religion, and some tragedies led him to denounce his faith and the existence of Yahweh. So evolution was invented by an atheist, and it's an enabler of atheism. It gives atheists an alternative, a way out. But what I've discussed so far about the eye is only the surface of the iceberg, really. It's many, many more times complicated than I could even imagine and try to even talk about. When you get down to the bio and the organic chemical level, it's just unbelievably complex. Which brings us to DNA. I hold in my hand 1 gig of computer storage. 1 gigabyte, that's 1,000 million bytes. Now, 50 years ago, you'd need this whole room filled with Cray Univac computers, you know, spinning disks and all that, to hold the information right here, a whole room full. And yet your own body cells are vastly more sophisticated than that, than today's technology. DNA is like a master computer, the essential part of every cell that dictates what it is, whether it's an eye cell or, you know, a skin cell or a stomach cell or whatever, and dictates all of its actions. And though the entire chain of DNA uses only 6 essential ingredients, the chain of DNA in your body is enormously long. Billions and billions of parts. If you were to stretch your DNA, that's the code in your genes, in your cells, if you were to stretch them all out in one length, it would extend 50 billion kilometers, which is from our Earth to beyond our solar system. That's how much. And yet, when I was a kid, I ordered this. Here's actual DNA. This is what it looks like. Looks like a thin spider web. And it says the entire human population living on Earth today received its hereditary characteristics through an amount of DNA equivalent to that embedded here. Talk about amazing. Talk about miraculous. The entire human population from this. Just amazing. So Yahweh's done far better than people give him credit for. The information is so compactly stored that the amount of DNA necessary to code all the people living on our planet, you could put in an aspirin tablet, according to, I don't have that there. According to this Paul Taylor, the Illustrated Origins Answer Book, page 23. DNA is the primary element of chromosomes. Each living species has a specific number. Humans have 23 in pairs, so that they have 46 chromosomes. And though different species may have the same number, DNA will be different from a human to a orangutan. And that's why you can't reproduce. The information coded on DNA makes the species that way, DNA different. Well, the ability of DNA genes to generate protein products also differs from animal to animal, species to species, which raises all important questions for evolutionists. At what point does DNA programming change to suit this change, which is a question I've always had? It'd be like trying to run today's computer on yesterday's software. Or modern updated software on an ancient computer. It isn't going to work. Believe me, I've tried it. I try to keep my computer as long as possible. Sometimes you just come to the point where you say, I'll give up, I got to buy another one. And old Bill Gates knows how to work that. So you just update the software, and eventually you got to have an updated computer, just the way it works. Faster, more memory, because it's more sophisticated software. Computer and software must be compatible or they won't work. And your body and DNA work the same way. Just think of one example, Down syndrome. Down syndrome, where the DNA affects the entire body. Down syndrome people have an extra number 21 chromosome, they say. And this is just a slight difference. But look how much impact it makes on the human being. Evolution from one species to another is a huge difference. And yet they say it happened all by itself. DNA is extremely sophisticated and complicated. DNA is like a computer program giving commands to cells, such as generating power. If you look at a cell, I think we heard a message on this a while back, how highly sophisticated the human cell is, or any cell, basically. You've got manufacturing a variety of products, proteins of high quality. You've got designing the function and the relationship of these products to work together, guiding key parts, the molecules, to their final destination and hitting it every time. Packaging certain molecules. Managing the transfer of information from one cell to another. And when they split, everything has to work together and be perfectly exactly the same in each one. Assuring the quality of products produced that would be way beyond what quality control we have today. Each cell deals with disposal of waste, growth, reproduction, and on it goes. And this is only part of the story about how DNA works. So you see, our bodies are far too complicated to have evolved. If the DNA could not precisely stay up with the changes in our body, we would cease to exist. And how does it do that? How does that change get from my eye to the genetic code so that all cells in the body reflect that? How does that work? Because DNA is the same virtually in every cell. That change has to go through every cell. How did that work? Ridiculous. Ridiculous to say that, well, it just happened. It, you know, just give us a few more billion years, and it'll work out. If the DNA evolved faster than the body wouldn't function, and we'd die, and vice versa. Then they have what they call RNA. DNA deoxyribonucleic acid, and you got RNA, which is ribonucleic acid, is basically the mirror image of DNA. And it carries out the instructions of the DNA. So here we have communication going on within the genes. Amazing. And the easiest way to think of DNA is a reverse copy. RNA, a reverse copy of DNA that travels from the nucleus to the area where production and manufacturing takes place within the cell. The nucleus is like a computer control room. The nucleus of your cell. Every cell has one. It's where the information from DNA is transferred to RNA. And inside you've got all sorts of complicated things going on. Nucleoli surround sections of specific chromosomes and facilitate the production of ribosomes. And it just gets so complicated, you know, our minds just stand in awe of how Yahweh could have done this. All in something you could barely see. One cell with the naked eye. I don't know if, I guess it's possible, but most of the cells are not visible by the naked eye. And the human body requires many thousands of different proteins to perform many tasks and many needs within the cell and many different types of proteins to build hair and nails and muscles and so forth. All of this has to be communicated. All this has to be worked out within cell, at the cell level. So the body itself is a marvel of miraculous design. It's like a little city all to itself. Each cell is like a little city. It makes energy. It digests. It manages waste. It has its own sophisticated transportation system within that cell, communicating with outer parts of the cell. It has its own checks and balances and backup systems, its own ways to deal with copy errors that happen. Did you know that in the cell, when you duplicate, there is only 1 in 1 billion to 1 in 100 billion chances that's going to go awry within the cell? That's how precise Yahweh has it, and how it's amazing how he puts it all together and makes it work. This is the kind of body we're talking about. And this is just, you know, one physical machine, you might say. On this planet, there are thousands of others, each one working the same, similar way. And you know, evolution says, well, see, that's the deal. They all kind of work the same, so one came from another. If you were a shoemaker or an artist or somebody, you put your brand on what you make, and you can look at everything produced, and you can see that each new creation has the imprint of the creator because it's, you know, that's his design. Same thing with our world. Same thing with this, with the physical and the cellular, all the way down to the cellular level, imprint of Yahweh in it. He makes it the same way. Why wouldn't he? Why would he make it completely different? Psalm 139:14 says, I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. The Hebrew says that what is made evokes fear and wonder in us. You can't look at the human body and say, or any creation of this world and say, there's no design behind it. There's no intelligence behind it. All you got to do is think about it a minute. How did it come to be? Psalm 92:5, O Yahweh, how great are your works, your thoughts are very deep. A brutish man knows not, neither does a fool understand this. Remember old C. Everett Koop, the attorney general, had the little goatee, remember him? He says, when I make an incision with my scalpel, I see organs of such intricacy that there simply hasn't been enough time for evolutionary processes to have developed them. In a book called The Retina of the Eye, an Evolutionary Roadblock, a doctor named H.S. Hamilton said that a mindless, purposeless chance process such as natural selection, acting on the sequels of recombinant DNA or random mutation, most of which are injurious or fatal, could fabricate such complexity and organization as the vertebrate eye, where each component must carry out its own distinctive task in a harmoniously functioning optical unit, is inconceivable. The total picture speaks of an intelligent creation, design of an infinitely high order. Anybody with a brain has to admit. But see, evolutionists don't want to think about that. Here's what Darwin himself said. To suppose that the eye, I'm going to see if I can find this. I'm way out of whack here. There's your DNA. Here we go. To suppose that the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, which we talked about, for admitting different amounts of light, and for correction of spherical and chromatic aberration, could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. This is Darwin speaking. Absurd. This is under his chapter called Difficulties. Yeah, should have been the whole book, not just a chapter. Yahweh says, the fool says in his heart, there is no Elohim. The Bible also proclaims that people are without excuse for not believing in Yahweh. You can't even dabble in this and not realize that Yahweh put it all together. The Bible also proclaims that people are without excuse for not believing in Yahweh. It says, for since the creation of the world, Yahweh's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood for what has been, so that men are without excuse. He says, you don't have an excuse. All you have to do is look at my creation, figure out something had to have been, something of high intelligence had to have been behind it. It had to have been. But you see, error is self-perpetuating. Few evolutionists are brave enough to cry out, you know, the emperor has no clothes. They're all afraid of that. As one writer expressed the academic process, I thought this was very good. This guy wrote in the Chicago Tribune, unfortunately, many scientists and non-scientists have made evolution into a religion, something to be defended against infidels. In my experience, many students of biology, professors and textbook writers included, have been so carried away with the arguments for evolution that they neglect to question it. They preach it. College students have gone through such a closed system of education, themselves become teachers, entering high schools to continue the process, using textbooks written by former classmates or professors. High standards of scholarship and teaching break down. Propaganda and the pursuit of power replace the pursuit of knowledge. Education becomes a fraud. Very good. I think he hit it right on the head. You know, the enlightened ones, those people that have a brain, haven't been led like lambs to the slaughter. They can see the awesomeness of Yahweh's creation and know it couldn't possibly, even the minutest part of it, the simplest part, have come about by itself. Because you look at the history of things, and they break down. They don't get more complex. They don't advance. They break down. This place, if we left it alone, didn't take care of it, within several hundred years, we'd have big holes in the ceiling and would rust out, and the rain and the elements would make it collapse. That's the way things go. These mountains out here are getting eroded. You see, drive along the road, you know, you got the cliffs here and the rocks are falling off and you see big holes. As the things age, they break down. That's just the way the world is. And that's a natural law, that things break down. As we get old, we break down. But that's just the way it is. They don't get more complex. That's totally absurd. Just the opposite of what we see in nature itself. In a book called Evolution from Space, two writers said, life cannot have had random beginning. The trouble is that there are about 2,000 enzymes, and the chance of obtaining them all in a random trial is only one part in 10 to the power of 40,000. An outrageously small probability that could not be faced even if the whole universe consisted of organic soup. If one is not prejudiced either by social beliefs or by a scientific training into the conviction that life originated on the earth, this simple calculation wipes out the idea entirely out of court. Interesting. Well, it is amazing that Yahweh has created us so wonderfully and so intricately, and that we can even understand just by looking at the complexities. As he said, that there is no excuse. There is no excuse to say, well, there's no mighty one. It all happened on its own. And that's the whole reason people believe in evolution. They don't want to believe in Yahweh. They don't want to believe in a power. Romans 1:20, we read, the invisible things of him from the creation are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even as eternal power and sovereignty, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew Elohim, they glorified him not as Elohim, neither were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations. Boy, if that doesn't nail down evolution right there, vain in their imaginations. Vanity of the human spirit, saying that I don't need Yahweh, I can understand it all on my own. And their foolish heart was darkened. And that's the way it is. I remember going to school in 10th grade, and the science teacher says, evolution is no longer a theory, kids, it's a fact. I don't know anybody, in all respect, that stupid today that would approach this topic and say that it is a fact when it's disproved everywhere you look. Everywhere you look. She says in verse 22, professing themselves wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible Elohim into an image made like corruptible man. See, bringing Yahweh down to our level and then obliterating him through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, turning the truth of Yahweh into a lie. And if this doesn't sound like the faith of evolution, worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forevermore. Well, I hope that maybe this message will have enlightened a little bit, got you to thinking a little bit. Because I remember when I was going through school, I had questions. I mean, when you're young and your mind is not sophisticated enough to pick up on some of this stuff, you start to question. Maybe this is, you know. And all it takes is a little maturity, a little thinking, and a little looking into it. And I don't know how any good scientist can look at that today, unless he's got a closed mind, and say, there's not a creator behind all of it. May Yahweh bless you.